And we have two new readers. We have
Charlotte.
We have Charlotte.
Hi, I'm your beloved Chuck, and I am an alcoholic.
Oh, beloved. Beloved.
I love Chuck C.
Okay. All right, let's turn to page 89, and our beloved Chuck is going to start reading Practical Experience.
Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intense work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to another alcoholic. You can help them when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives.
That is one of my favorite paragraphs in the whole big book, and that has come to pass for me. Page 96, we're just going to read a little bit about working with others. And try and get through this. We might skip some stuff so you can look at your format because we are running out of tape. And I don't want him to have to put 2 minutes on a seventh tape. Okay, go ahead. Bottom of 96, Charlotte. He may be broke.
He may be broke and homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job or give him a little financial assistance. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days, but be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that, and you only harm him. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery.
Okay, now Ted and I are in a place where we can take people in because we have a nice home and we don't have any children living with us. And in the last 5 years, we've always had somebody living with us. So we've even had up to 4 people living with us. But we do not just take anybody in off the street that we see at a meeting. We don't take them in until we see them around the rooms really trying. I had this one woman who's asked me several times if she could live, and I would not take her in because of the stuff I was. And now she's living with me, but I've had to watch her for the last few months try the most I've ever seen her try. So we're very careful about who we take into our home. They have to be people that we really see trying, and they haven't all stayed sober. You know, we had one of our women that Ted and I dearly love, and it just broke our heart. She was drinking vanilla extract. You know, and we let her get away with it a couple times, and finally we had to ask her move. And I'm still working with her, and I'm still sponsoring her. And I just love this woman. I just love her. But we are in a position to do that. But I personally don't recommend in taking in alcoholics if you have children in the home, you know, or if it's an imposition whatsoever on a spouse that's not in the program. And all that's optional. You know, God will reveal to you. Turn to page 98. And let's go to job or no job, wife or no wife. I don't know if you guys can see it on your page. It's in the middle of the second paragraph, down towards the bottom of the second paragraph. And let's give that to beloved Chuck. Do you see it? They can see it. I have it highlighted for them.
Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into your consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that we trust in God and clean house. Okay. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another.
Wait just a minute. You guys lost that because it's on page 99. Oh. He just jumped ahead on you. The bottom of 99. Go ahead. Do that again. Go ahead and read that again.
Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. We have seen men get well whose family have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
Okay, we're going to skip through some pages at you guys because I'm trying to get through some of this. So let's go to page 132. On your format, you'll see some other things added, but we're going to skip through those. How are we doing on time, Jerry? 2 minutes left? We're not going to make it. Okay. Go down to the paragraph. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And I read that paragraph every time I get on an airplane. Oh, you guys. Oh, I'm sorry. 102. Forget the tape. Let's just relax up here. Okay, now, 102. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Okay, now let's turn to page 132. Okay, whose turn is it? Charlotte's turn. We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things.
We have been speaking to you of serious, sometimes tragic things. We have been dealing with alcohol in its worst aspect. But we...
Men and women who have lost their legs, they never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people.
I rest my case.
Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever, with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list ad infinitum.
And I know this was so important at my first meeting when I heard them read this. Even though I was looking for the differences, I couldn't deny that, well, I'd done that, reading inspirational books, physical exercise, going to a church, swearing off forever, sleeping with the minister. I mean, you know, I could identify with this even though I was out there looking for the differences. So this is a great thing when you're working the first three steps, and I think it's a great thing to read at the meetings before you read how it works, because it talks about the problem, and then you talk about the solution. How many people can find themselves somewhere in this paragraph? Unanimous, probably even the non-alcoholics in here. Okay, let's turn to page 25. Thank God there is a solution. Okay.
There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help.
Okay, go up to the sentence where it says, the central fact of our lives today. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts, and you can read it either way, entered into our hearts and lives in a way, or entered into our hearts and lives in a way, which is indeed miraculous. Mm. Have any of you ever noticed that? Yeah, I never noticed it till I was doing a little group. It was just a little group in my house, and they got in a fight on which one was right. lives. And I thought, oh, gosh, he's fighting anyone or anything. It works, however you read it, whether you read it lives or lives.
Which did I read it?
Huh?
Which did I read it?
I think you said lives.
My hearts and lives.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think you said lives. So anyway, that's just a little bit of trivia for you there. Okay, this is the basic readings that we've done towards step one, so we're going to get into step two. Does anybody have any questions? And what time is it? I can't see the clock. 20 to 11. Okay, so what we'll do is take a break. Does anybody have any questions? No? God, I'm doing a good job. Wow! Or it's God. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break so we can get through step two. Wait a minute! So we can get through step two and three. So please, 10 minutes, try and watch your clock and come back so we don't have to hunt you down because it takes almost a half hour to gather you guys, you drunks, together. Okay, I'm going to tell you a little story about this ego deflation. You know, I just hate to admit some of my character defects to you, but I'm going to admit something to you. I used to have my original big book, and it was so used that all the pages were absolutely falling out. I mean, it was just awful. And so I got another big book. I went to another big book study, and I got that. And the same thing happened. So I had been through two big books, and the pages were just worn and falling out. And then I got to a place of really being visible in AA, you know, where I started speaking and doing these workshops and stuff. And my book was an absolute mess. And I wasn't willing to get a new book because I didn't want to come up here with a new book and have you guys think I didn't use my book. How's that? That is totally embarrassing for me to admit that. But that's what finally happened. I don't know when it finally hit me. I was doing an inventory or something that I had this ego, and I wanted you guys to know how much I use my book. So I wasn't willing to get a book that I could read anymore. And then thank God, my eyesight got so bad, I was forced to get a big, big book.
All right.
And get honest. So now that you're impressed that I really used my book. Okay, let's turn to page 43. Now we're going into stuff dealing with step two. Okay, and we have two new readers, and these two truly did volunteer. They did not get picked on and forced up here. And your name is?
My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jack.
I'm Donna, and I'm an alcoholic.
Okay, and be sure when you're reading to read into the microphone because so if people can hear you on tape. Okay, so Jack is going to read once more. This is on page 43, once more.
Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power.
Okay, so this brings me to another story that I want to share with you about a woman named Cheryl. And Cheryl is an entertainer, and it's so funny, my husband just popped in a tape the other day, and I was listening to that tape, and it was so wonderful, and I went, who is that woman? I've never heard that woman. And I looked at that tape, and it was this woman that I'd had all these encounters with. But anyway, this woman's an entertainer, and she sings, and she travels all over, and anybody who knows me knows the ladybug story, and anybody who knows Vivian knows the ladybug story. We collect ladybugs, we wear ladybugs, we wear them in the memory of the innocent children of alcoholic parents. So everyone is very familiar with the ladybug story. And anyway, I did not sponsor Cheryl. Vivian sponsored Cheryl. She lived in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And she had done her steps, but she really had, her higher power was really Vivian. Or her higher power was me, or her higher power was Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, she really still didn't have a power greater than herself except for the program and the people in the program, which she considered God with skin. You know, and anyway, so she had 6 months of sobriety, and she was in another state, and she had just done this concert, and they had a cast party afterwards, and she was in this drinking this drinking situation. Everybody there was drinking, and the obsession to drink hit her, and it hit her really hard. She just wanted to drink more than anything, but she also did not want to drink, you know, and so she went into a room, and she got on the phone, and she called Vivian, and Vivian was not home. And so she called me, and I was not home. So she did something that she didn't really believe in. She took a set of actions contrary to the way she felt. She went into the bathroom. She got on her knees, and she said, God, if you're real, you're going to have to help me. You're going to have to remove this obsession so that I don't drink. And she left that party, and she went to a cafe, and she was sitting in the cafe, and she ordered a salad. And when they brought her the salad, in the salad was a live ladybug. And the minute she saw the ladybug, the obsession to drink was removed. And that was her spiritual experience, because she took those actions of praying to a God she didn't believe in. And when she saw that ladybug, everything she ever saw in AA, her sponsor was there, I was there, and she came to believe in a power greater than herself. Her defense came from a higher power. Even though she really didn't even believe in which, you know, who she was praying to, her defense came from a higher power. Okay, let's turn to page 44. I forgot your name. I'm sorry, honey.
Donna.
Okay, Donna. Chapter to the Agnostic, in the preceding chapters.
In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer.
Okay, let's go back to the sentence where it says, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. So this is narrowing it down a little bit further. And the one sentence I really like is where it says, if you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. I mean, say you only drink once a year, but you can't control it. And you go on a big binge. And so you don't, that's one of the, a big problem are binge drinkers. People who come into this program, and when they drink, they can't control it. And then they'll get a period of sobriety, and then they drink again. And so they're used to that, and they have a hard time in this program. Those of us who are continuous drinkers, who drink every day, it's a little easier for us to mount up those days of sobriety. It's really hard for a binge drinker because they're used to periods of sobriety. Mm-hmm. But if when you drink, you can't control it, this is telling you're probably an alcoholic. How many here are binge drinkers that had that problem? Did you have more difficulty getting sober because you were used to periods of sobriety? The people I've worked with that were binge drinkers really did, you know, that was a real problem for them. They had a harder time than the ones that were continuous hard drinkers. Go ahead.
To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue. Hoping against hope, we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted.
And I just want to share with you my experience of my 20 years of working with other alcoholics. I've worked with atheists, and I've worked with agnostics, and I have found, this is just my personal experience, they have an easier time getting this program than someone who comes in here with a punishing God.
Mm-hmm.
People who come in here with a concept of God that is punishing have a much harder time of getting it than an atheist and alcoholic, the spiritual part of this program. And the only thing, we can choose our own conception of God, that's very clear in this program. But the only thing I do want to point out is in tradition 2, it says we're governed by a loving God. And all I know is the God I found in this program is a loving God. I mean, look what I did to the church. I mean, if someone was going to be zapped, I would be zapped. God, you wouldn't want to be standing next to me. God loved alcoholics so much. He loved us so much that he gave us the 12 steps. That's how much God loved us. Gave us a way out, and he gave us the 12 steps. Okay, let's turn to page 45. Next page over. Lack of power. I'll let you guys keep track of whose turn to read, okay?
Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God.
Okay. And this says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. And that's exactly what the 12 steps are about. Enable us to find a power greater than ourselves. And the one thing that was pointed out to me, that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. You know, when I came in here, I had a mouth on me that was not good. It was a street mouth. And in the sign, we had a sign in the club that I was at that profanity is not a sign of spiritual growth. And I was really told that I needed to clean up my language, you know, when I got to this program. So I try very hard not to say any bad words at the podium. However, I am still guilty when I'm joking around, and so I try to keep it really clean. So if I slip, forgive me. I mean, if I slip, it'll be nothing more than butt or something like that. But I still do believe that profanity is not a sign of spiritual growth. And I know it takes some of us a very long time to get to that level in our sobriety. So I'm not putting anybody down. Believe me, I'm just pointing out things to you that were pointed out to me in my recovery. And as I learned to clean up my language, my thinking also, you know, I had to take a set of actions that changed my thinking, you know, and so I cleaned up my language and my thinking changed and my spiritual status changed. And so a lot of that has a lot to do with our spirituality, is the way we talk and what comes out of our mouth. Okay, turn to page 46. 46, much to our relief.
Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
I just love that. That just gives me chills when I read that. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. And I want to share a story with you about an atheist that I took through the first three steps. And this was a man. And normally, you know, I believe there are instances where men and women have to sponsor the opposite sex. And I love this one woman. Basically, I believe, basically, men sponsor men and women sponsor women. But there are times when that's not applicable. And I love this one speaker I heard. She got up there at the podium and she sponsors a lot of men. And she got up there and she said, I don't sponsor men, and I don't sponsor women. I don't sponsor gays. I don't sponsor blacks. I sponsor alcoholics! You know, and when she said that, I thought, oh, wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, you know. Nowhere in here does it say, you know, a man can't sponsor a woman or a woman can't sponsor a man. But through my experience, you know, I've noticed that is very dangerous. I've seen boy meet girl on AA campus and a lot of, so I basically, you know, basically, but sometimes it's not applicable, and this is one of those times. This was a man who approached me, and he was an atheist, and he heard my story, and he knew that I tried to recover in church, and he tried to recover in church. In fact, he went to any lengths, we'll say, about in church. He had gone Mormon, Catholic, Methodist, Buddhist, Hindu, Eastern religions, all this stuff, and he tried to recover from the disease of alcoholism, and he could not recover. And so he came to a place where he just didn't believe in God. He just did not believe in God. And he came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he felt this thing in these rooms where he really believed in the people, and he really believed in the steps, something about it. And so he got right in my face, and he said, "I really want to go through the steps. Will you take me through the steps?" And, you know, I talked about the man-woman thing, and he said, "You're the only one because you've tried to recover in church, and you know what I'm talking about." And he said, "But the only thing is don't bring up God, because I don't want to hear a word about God." And I just didn't know how I was going to do this, is because, you know, I believe in God. You know, how am I going to take him through the steps when I believe in God? And I procrastinated, and finally I just remembered, you know, the third tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. The requirement for membership is not that you have to believe in God. You know, and he was willing to do the steps, and I was willing to do whatever I could, and I had a man with me. So two of us did it, and this man had more sobriety than I did at the time. And anyway, all I knew to do is to take him through the steps the way I did it, just what we're doing here, all this reading, first three steps. And every other word is God, 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 you know. And I'm getting to the God word, and I'm getting nervous, you know. And so I would change the God word to Alcoholics Anonymous, or the group, or the spirit of the people, or, you know, I somehow changed the words, and we got through all the readings without him getting too agitated. Then it came to actually taking those steps, and there was no problem getting through step one. And then we struggled on getting through step two, but we changed the words, and we manipulated it, and we got to step, you know, through step two. But then when it came to step three, we really had a struggle, turning your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him. And we really struggled with that, and I changed the words. I said, "Well, can you turn your will and your life over to the care of the group? It's a group of people that are sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "Well, they're just people. They're just people. Why would I do that?" And I said, "Well, can you turn your will and your life over to the care of the 12 steps?" And he thought about that, and he said, "That kind of makes sense, but that's not something like he could feel like he could do." And I gave it my best shot. I mean, much more than what I'm telling you. And I was really, you know, getting kind of frustrated, and he was getting agitated, and you know, you could just see it on his face. He was getting really agitated. And finally, I just remembered this man named Bill Honeycutt, who used to always say, "God is good and good is God." And I told him, I said, "You know, there's this man who's now deceased, and he always said that God is good and good is God. Can you turn your will and your life over to the care of good?" And he stopped and he thought. It was just like, for some reason, that it was just like a spark went on, and he stopped and he thought about it, and he said, "You know, when I walk into a meeting, I feel a spirit of good. I feel a spirit of good. I feel a spirit of good. I can turn my will and my life over to that spirit of good." And that man that had 18 years, he jumped up and he said, "Oh, well, that works for me." I went, "Oh, that works for me." You know, and so we got on our knees and we said the third step prayer by changing the words, you know. And then afterwards he got up and he gave me a great big hug, and he sobbed and he cried, and he said he was so afraid he couldn't have this program because he didn't believe in God. And I knew at that moment that this man still considered himself an atheist, and I was right in the middle of a spiritual experience. My God is so pure and so perfect, and my God does not have an ego, and my God does not need to take credit. My God only cares that somebody is willing to change their life by applying these principles in all my affairs. And I can tell you today that man has had a spiritual experience, and he's now a very active member of this program. Okay, when therefore we speak to you of God.
When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual experiences which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. To effect our first concise relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven amongst us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built.
Okay, so this paragraph tells us that we don't have to, I don't know if you got this. This paragraph says we don't have to believe. This says all we have to do is be willing to believe. That's all we have to do is be willing to believe. And this man I told you about, the atheist, had that willingness. He really wanted what we had. Even though he didn't want to hear a word about God, he wanted what we had. That was a degree of willingness that led him on this spiritual path. A lot of people think that when they come to step two, that if they can't say that they believe in God, that they have to stop. They believe that they have to find God to do the steps. And that's not true. The 12th step says that we've had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing those first 11 steps. We don't find God to do the steps. We do the steps to find God. And this is the paragraph that tells us all we have to do is be willing. That's all we have to do is be willing. And it really takes an obstinate, you know, I am not going to do it. I just, you know, it really takes a lot not to be able to continue doing the steps with what this book offers us. It really takes a lot of obstinance, like, F you, get out of my face, I want out of here. That's basically all it takes, you know, to walk out the doors, because any kind of degree of willingness to even sit in these rooms is enough willingness to continue with these steps. Okay, let's turn to page 569. Let me tell you why we're turning to page 569. There's this asterisk on page 47. And we've passed this asterisk several times. I don't know if you've noticed that we passed it on page 25. We've passed it on page 27. And now here it is on 47. And this asterisk is telling us to see spiritual appendix in the back of the book, 569. And what this does is this... This appendix talks about a spiritual experience of the educational variety and a spiritual experience of the thunderbolt lightning kind. And as you heard in my story, well, I've actually had both spiritual experiences. I had a spiritual experience of the thunderbolt lightning kind, and that was not enough for me to stop drinking. I came into this program, and I had a spiritual experience of the educational variety. I had that plan of action, and that was what enabled me to quit drinking. Some people can quit drinking with that thunderbolt lightning, but I had to have a plan of action. But anyway, this will just talk about the difference. Whose turn is it, Jack or Donna's?
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. We can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Okay, let's turn to page 51.
Gotta love it.
And I'm sure you're all aware that this book was written before we landed on the moon, so you're going to hear some strange little words in here about the moon and lunar flight and stuff. And so just remember when the book was written, okay? Okay, is it Jackson? It's Jack and Donna, right?
Right.
Okay, I'm having little brain things up here. CRS. Okay, this world of ours.
This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than in all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Yet, in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, man's mind were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. We asked ourselves this. Are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as we were as ancients against the realm of the material? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go into the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds had proven man could never fly? Had not people said God had reserved this privilege for the birds? Only 30 years later, the conquest of the air was almost an old story, and airplane travel was in full swing. But in most fields, our generation has witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, "I bet they'd do it." Maybe not so long either. Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does?
Okay, so this is talking about our readiness to change our point of view. And the readiness we're talking about is our readiness to change our point of view about God, just as we changed our point of view about air travel. So, Donna, you want to pick up? We had to ask ourselves?
Sure. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply.
Want to read into the microphone, honey?
Yes.
Thank you.
I do. Thank you.
We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did.
And this page is also telling us that the God idea is not only going to help us with our alcoholism, the God idea is going to help us with all these things we just read about. Having trouble with personal relationships. Boy, is that a promise. Couldn't control our emotional nature. Prey of misery and depression. That the God idea is going to help us with all our problems. Not just putting the plug in the jug. It's going to help us with all our problems. If we have the readiness to change our point of view. Okay, page 53. Jack, when we became alcoholics.
When we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith.
Okay, so this is telling us either God is or he isn't, and it's our choice. It's our choice. Those of us who know God is, we know God is no matter what. But if you refuse to believe in God or you refuse to change your point of view, God can't be there for you unless you invite him in or unless you're willing to even accept him. God is always there, but it's our choice. Either God is or he isn't. What is your choice going to be? Okay, let's turn to page 55. Yet we've been seeing another kind of flight. One thing I want to tell you about, this is one of those pages, I just had a little memory. This is one of those pages where, this is a page where we're going to read that you find God deep within. And there was this group of alcoholics, when Bill wrote this, there's this group of alcoholics that believed that God was a being up in the sky, and they made Bill take it out of the book. So he snuck it back in another part, because he believed when he wrote that, I mean, that he didn't write it. He believed his pen didn't even touch the page, that it was written by God. And he truly believed that it doesn't matter if God is a being in the sky. Our feelings are within, and we can only feel within. Whether God's inside or outside, our feelings are within. So we have to find God deep within, because that's where our feeling and our connection is, within. Okay.
Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found that the great reality deep down within us, in the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you.
So as a result of living this program on a continuous basis, the consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. God will continue to reveal himself to you the more you live this way of life. And the consciousness of your belief might change. You know, and it's going to be your own personal relationship with God. I mean, yours might be different than mine, but it's going to be your own personal relationship with God, and God will continually reveal himself to you. I mean, my consciousness of belief today is different than it was 5 years ago, and 5 years ago it's different than it was 5 years before that, because I continue this path and God reveals himself more to me. Okay, let's turn to page 12. And this is Bill, part of Bill's spiritual experience. That's why I save it for step two. And if you want to write in your book, it says, despite the living example of my friend, he's talking about Ebbie Thatcher. And whose turn is it to read? Jack? Okay, despite the living example.
Despite the living example of my friend, there remained in me a vestige of my old prejudice. The word God still aroused a certain antipathy. When the word God still aroused... Oh, I just read that.
That's all right.
I'm just a drunk. What can I tell you? When the thought was expressed that there might be a God, personal to me, these feelings was intensified. I didn't like... Jeez, I'm losing my mind here.
I didn't like the idea
I could go for such conceptions as creative intelligence, universal mind or spirit or nature, but I resisted the thought of a czar of the heavens, however loving his way might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. My friend suggested what then seemed a novel idea. He said, why don't you choose your own conception of God? That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow I had lived and shivered many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. It was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make my beginning. I saw that growth could start from that point. Upon a foundation of complete willingness, I might build what I saw in my friend. Would I have it? Of course I would. Thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. a new world came into view.
I love this page, and when I read it, I just get the chills. Even now, I just got the chills reading it. And this page came to me. I was on the plane. I have a terrible fear of flying, and as you know, I have to fly a lot to get to some of these places. And at one of these points, I was just I was so scared. I cannot tell you how scared I was, and I just had tears in my eyes. And I sat on the plane. To get on the plane, I try to find somebody in the airport I can help. I help little old ladies with their baggage. I scare a few of them. I do whatever I can just to get on the plane.
Give me that bag. I want to help you.
I do whatever I can to get out of myself, to think of somebody there to get on the plane. But once you're strapped in there, and if there's nobody there on either side, or, you know, nobody wants to talk, it's hard to help somebody. And so I was just sitting there and thinking, oh, God, what do I do now? And I just, my big book just opened. You know, I just read this page. And the part that jumped out at me was, thus was I convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. And I knew I really wanted God. I really wanted God. And it said God is concerned, but we have to want him. God can't force himself on us. Maybe he could, but God doesn't. That's not the way God operates. We have to want God, just like we can't force sobriety on you. You know, you have to want it. You have to want it enough to come in here, at least take a set of actions you that might be contrary to the way you believe. So God is concerned with us when we want him enough. And that was the powerful thing, the powerful message for me on that day. Okay, let's turn to page 58. No, let's turn to page 42. I'm sorry. We might do this. Okay, page 42. Just jump down at the bottom, and I'll read this because it's just one sentence. It says, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. Now, in the big book, you're going to hear a lot of people talk, you know, about spiritual principles, and they'll give you all the spiritual principles like honesty and unselfishness and all that stuff. But according to the big book, the spiritual principles we're talking about in the big book, because those are spiritual principles too, ones we're talking about in the big book are the steps. Those are the spiritual principles we're talking about in the big book. Now, does that mean that the 12 steps are going to cure cancer? Does that mean that the 12 steps are going to cure grave emotional mental disorders? You know, I sponsor schizophrenics in here. I sponsor manic depressives. I sponsor bipolar people. You know, and those 12 steps has not cured that. I've sponsored people with multiple sclerosis, and those 12 steps did not cure that. But what those 12 steps did is that opened them up. It opened them up to a God that helped them get through it, and it opened them up to a God that led them to the help that they needed. So let's turn to page 133. And I'll also read this because I think this is very important. And one thing that I stress from the podium, and my sponsor also stresses from the podium, is that, I mean, I've heard speakers get up here at the podium and put down the psychiatric effort, and I used to be one of those. I used to do that because it didn't work for me, and I used to stand up here, and I had an old-timer just grab me by the ear, and he ripped me outside, and he pointed out this paragraph, and he says, we walk hand-in-hand with the medical profession. Don't you ever put down the psychiatric effort, you know, and he pointed out this sentence to me, and I'm so very grateful he did. I've had people stand up here and say, the steps, Prozac. That's an outside issue. To say that is breaking the traditions. You know, that is an outside issue. And there are some people that come into these rooms that need outside help, and it is in the big book. And so this paragraph we're going to read tells me I'm not to get up here and play doctor. That is not my job in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to get up here and play a doctor. My job is just to guide you through the steps and let God guide you to the help you need. And if you're on medication that you don't need, doing the steps is going to reveal that to you, and you're going to get off. If you need medication, God's going to guide you to the help you need. You open it up, and we're going to let God be the director. God is the director. But this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. In fact, no, jump up to now about health. Now about health. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful. I'm having the same problem, Jack. We are convinced that the spiritual mode of living is the most powerful health restorative. We who have recovered from serious drinking are miracles of mental health, but we have seen remarkable transformations in our bodies. Hardly one of our crowd shows signs of any mark of dissipation. But this does not mean that we disregard human health measures. God the word God, has abundantly supplied this world with fine doctors, psychologists, and practitioners of various kinds. Do not hesitate to take your health problems to such persons. Most of them give freely of themselves that their fellows may enjoy sound minds and bodies. When I first read that, I thought, you know, but I have found doctors that I take alcoholics that don't have any insurance to, and they will see them, and they give them samples of medication, you know, like antibiotics and stuff like that. I have truly found doctors that freely give themselves when I am honest and open with them about my alcoholism and that I'm willing to work with alcoholics. In fact, I just had an ENT doctor. I have lots of sinus problems, and you know, I said, if you know any alcoholics, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic, I got to be careful with medication. If you know any alcoholics I can work with, and he says, oh, well, my sister's an alcoholic, and she lives in New Orleans. I said, well, that's funny. I'm going to Louisiana next week. And I got to spend the weekend with his sister, 12-stepping her, because I was honest with my doctor. Okay, that they may enjoy sound minds and bodies. And he's one of those that'll give antibiotics to alcoholics who cannot afford to give them. He gives samples. A lot of doctors have samples. So sometimes if you just approach doctors, they truly, truly will freely give of themselves. Try to remember that though God has wrought miracles upon us, we should never belittle a good doctor or a psychiatrist. Their services are often indispensable in treating a newcomer and following his case afterwards. So this is the paragraph that tells me that I'm not to play doctor, that God is the director, and we can't disregard human health measures. Whether they're mental, you know, mental, physical, whatever, we can't disregard human health measures. However, usually sobriety does make a big difference in both of those areas in our life. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. But some of us do come in here, and we do have to seek outside help. Okay, turn to page 58. Having another hot flash up here. Getting dressed, getting undressed, getting dressed, getting undressed. Sheesh. Okay. Wow. Okay. Is it Donna's turn to read? Okay.
Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
One thing I also want to point out about all those things that said about praying for yourself, this says we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. You know, after my daughter's rape, this came really clear to me, after my daughter being kidnapped and raped, and I read this sentence during the steps, I realized as long as I'm living these steps and I'm working these steps on a daily basis, you know, I can pray for God's protection and compare and care with complete abandon. That's one of the sentences that helps me get on an airplane every time I have to fly to a conference. You know, and some of you have heard in my talk that I'm not afraid of flying, I'm afraid of crashing. And so this tells me that I can pray for his protection, care with complete abandon. It's not just when you're, I mean, I live the steps on a daily basis. So on a daily basis, I can pray for that. Okay, here are the steps. That's just my personal experience and my thing. That might not work for you, and that's okay. And I've been pretty preachy up here, and I'm really sorry because I don't believe in that. I believe in just sharing your experience. And I have been preachy, and so I want to make amends right now. I'll try and do better. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry it out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives.
So that's step 1.
B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism.
Step 2.
C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Step 3. Let's turn back to page 59. And let's take a look at these steps. And if I was working one-to-one with an alcoholic, I would go to step 1. And we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And this is where I'd get them to talk to me about their drunkalog. You know, and I would ask them one-to-one to tell me about everything that happens to them when they're drinking, not every little thing in the world that's happened. I've already heard their life story. You know, in step 5 it says we've already heard their life story, but this is what I'm going to be talking to them about, what actually happens to them when they drink. What are their experiences? So I want each one of you to think about some of your experiences when you drink. I mean, do any of you have blackouts? How many of you have blackouts? Whew. Well, I'm in the minority. Wow. Okay, how many of you have been to jail? How many of you have lost family? How many of you have lost friends? Jobs? Dropped out of school? Self-respect? All of this. Just think about all the things that have happened to you while drinking. You know, waking up with a lower companion. With me, I was the lower companion. That other people woke up with. But just think about all those things that happened to you when drinking. Now, I want you to think about your life being unmanageable. Think about the unmanageability of your life. Okay, we all admit our life's unmanageable when drinking. But how many of you can say that your life was unmanageable before you took a drink? How many of you, your life was unmanageable before you took a drink? Now, how many of you, your life was manageable, and then when you started drinking, it became unmanageable? A few of you. And I know a lot of people, they have normal lives, and then they cross what they call that invisible line, and their life becomes unmanageable. But I'd say the majority of people that I've worked with are like me. My life was always unmanageable. And drinking was my solution. And then my solution turned on me. And it became a problem bigger than the unmanageability of my life. And that's what I hear from a lot of people that I work with. Now, how many of you have, let's say, over a year of sobriety? How many of those people who just raised their hand, their life is still unmanageable? Okay, sometimes. That is what is for me. Even today, with 20 years of sobriety, my life is still unmanageable when I stop doing the things I did to get sober. I need to keep suiting up and showing up to keep manageability in my life, or my life becomes unmanageable again. And a lot of it really boils down to still getting out of myself and thinking of another human being. You know, so I can still have a lot of unmanageability in my life. And that's why, with 20 years of sobriety, I'm more passionate about AA than I have ever been. I work with more alcoholics than I've ever worked with. I keep doing the things today that I did when I got sober, so I can my life will remain manageable, because that's my natural state is confusion. Confusion and unmanageability, that's my natural state. Okay, step two. Does everybody feel like they've taken step one? Is there anybody who doesn't feel like they're... I'm not going to ask that, because I know we have some non-alcoholics in here, so forget that. Okay, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, remember, we talked about that power can be your own conception of God, and all you have to do is be willing to believe. You don't have to actually believe. So this step is really easy. This step is really easy, and if you have any kind of willingness, this will enable you to go beyond, to continue your steps to find that power greater than yourself. Hopefully, the God that we talk about. And if not, that's fine too. So came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and that can be the group, that can be your sponsor, that can be anything greater than yourself. I know people who their power was the ocean. I know somebody whose power was a tree. The only problem with that, when he went out of the tree, his power wasn't with him. You know, so that was a little tough for him. But I judge no man. No, no. But that power can be anything. It can be just the concept of the 12 steps. Does everybody here feel like they've taken step two, that they've come to believe that some kind of a power can restore them to sanity? Let's see hands. Let's see if it's enough to continue here. Okay. All right. Is there anybody who does not believe that alcoholism is a form of insanity? Does everybody, they're doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results? That alcoholism is a form of insanity. Okay, so it looks like we've basically taken steps one and two the best you can in a group. And so step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care. We're asking God to take care of us again. There's that word care. We just read it up here when it says we ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we're making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And care is a very loving word. You know, and I hear a lot of people that think really tragic things that happen to them must be God's will. That's just not what I get in this when I'm reading all these words about care, which is a very loving, a very loving word. And one thing I want to talk about step three is I want to talk a little bit about how step three came about. One of the most powerful things in this step is God as we understand, God as we understood him. And how that came about, and I told you those first 40 alcoholics, there were 79, 40 had input on the big book. We had a couple of atheists, and one in particular, and I think his name was Jim. Was his name Jim, the atheist, that was the traveling salesman? Yeah, and he was just adamant on the God thing, just adamant. He didn't want the God thing in here. He wanted to preach the psychological thing. He didn't want the God thing. But because of him, they put this little thing in here that's opened this up for alcoholics, God as we understood him because of him. And anyway, what happened to him is he ended up... staunch atheist, he ended up on a traveling cell. In fact, they wanted him to drink. This group was sick of him. You know, they wanted him to just get drunk and get the heck out because he did all this blasphemy. You know, and so finally at this one point, he was a traveling salesman, and he was out, and he ended up getting drunk, and he was held up in this hotel drunk, and he started calling people, and none of them even wanted to assist him. I mean, they were fed up with him and his blasphemy. And anyway, he ended up opening the drawer, and that's where they had those Gideon Bibles and stuff in those hotels, and he pulled out that Bible, and he started reading it, and he had a spiritual experience, you know, and he came to believe, and he ended up coming back into the rooms, believing in a power greater than himself. But the fact is, if it wasn't for him being an atheist at that time, we wouldn't have this, God as we understood him, which has opened the doors for many, many alcoholics to take this step. It's just one of those God things. Every time I hear this stuff, I just get chills. The hair stands up on my neck. I get chills just seeing how God works and how he's operated and given us these steps and how they came about. But anyway, another key word here, made a decision. That's all step three is a decision. You know, when I was really dealing with fear, I had alcoholics tell me, well, it sounds like I haven't taken a thorough third step. You know, when we get into reading later on, we'll find out all the third step, we're reading that now, all the third step is a decision. That's all it is. And the way you follow up on that decision, have you ever asked yourself, how do you turn your will and your life over to God? How do you do that? I've heard people say, I give it to him, I take it back, I give it to him, and I take it back. I mean, how do you really start the process of turning your will over to God? The way you start that process is taking those actions of 4 through 9. That's how you start the process of really giving your will over to God, is you take those actions of steps 4 through 9. And how do you continue on a daily basis turning your will and your life over the care of God? You live in 10, 11, and 12. That's how you... Simple. Isn't it simple? Mm-hmm. It's really hard when you think you got to give this to him and you're taking it back, and I just picture it with a rope struggling, you know, me and God. You know, it's really simple when you just boil it down. You take these actions. That's how you do the process of turning your will and your life over to the care of God. Okay, let's turn back to 60. What time does that clock say?
5:12.
Okay, can we go till about 10 minutes after? Okay, and then we'll be done. Turn back to 60. And is it Donna's turn to read?
I don't know.
Does everybody feel like they've taken the third step? Doesn't matter, we're continuing anyway. Okay. Maybe somehow God will get you here. Okay. Being convinced we were at step three.
Being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would just stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity?
Now, this last paragraph that we just read, I used to hate this paragraph. I don't know why. I like the one part, our actor is self-centered and egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. But I really got bored with this. He is like a retired businessman who lolls in the floor, the sunshine. I mean, I'd get bored with this, and I'm trying to rush through the steps, so a lot of the times I'd take that paragraph out. And then something happened in the Augusta area. As I told you that, I am I'm an animal lover. I just love animals, and I love nature. I used to say I love nature. I actually hate it when I see a hawk take the baby birds out of somebody else's nest. That really bothers me. But I'm really an animal lover, and we had a thing going on in Augusta, Georgia, where we have the way they were euthanizing the dogs, the stray dogs. And it was a horrible thing that I read in the paper about the way they were doing it, gassing them, and the big dogs, they'd take chains and wrap them around their throats and strangle them. And it just made me sick. You know, it just made me sick, and I was so upset, and I'd rant, and I'd rave, and I'd not read the newspaper. And this thought kept coming into my head, this paragraph that I wanted to get rid of. You know, he is like the retired businessman who lolls in the floor of the sunshine in the winter, complaining about the sad state of the nation. I mean, over and over that sentence came into my head. And so finally I knew it's all in the big book. Every problem I have is in the big book, that I needed to do something. You know, and I started calling the Humane Society, and I started making calls to county commissioners, and I started doing my part. And I got in there, and I can tell you today in our area that all dogs are euthanized by lethal injection. That is no longer happening. And it's not just because of me. I mean, it's because of everybody. But finally, I stopped being that Florida man lolling in the Florida sunshine. You know, I started to take, you know, something bothered me, I might as well do something about it. I need to speak my truth. I'm to pack into the mainstream of life, not just an AA. I'm to pack into the mainstream of life of my community. And that's what I did. And it was just this haunting paragraph that I wanted to rip out of the steps because I didn't like it. Okay, let's turn back. Back to 62. Whose turn? Jack's turn. Remember to read it. Oh, you do good about that. Okay. Selfishness and self-centeredness.
That we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made a decision based on self, which later placed in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making.
And I want to point out that word basically. This says, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. A lot of the time when we come into these rooms, we have troubles that are not of our own making. You know, I sponsor women that have suffered terrible tragedies. I mean, I have suffered women that have been through incest, have been through, and my husband too, you know, brutal physical abuse as kids. I sponsor people who were raised in satanic cults. If you want to hear some terror stories, you could hear something about that. You don't even want to go there. And these problems were not of their making. These were things that they came in that happened to them as innocent children. And innocent children, that's exactly the word. Little children are innocent. But when we come into these rooms and the spiritual set of tools are laid at our feet, then we have a way out. And then our problems become of our making. We can either pick up the set of tools and get out of the problem and move into the solution, or we can stay the victim. You know, that was then, and this is now. We need to get out of the victim role, and we need to move into this mode and this way of living. Okay, go ahead.
They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it'll kill us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and psychological convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed.
Okay, what position are we talking about taking? Quit playing God. Quit playing God. Okay.
We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he had provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. Our little plans and designs, more and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter.
We were reborn. Okay, we're going to say the third step prayer in a minute, but first of all, I'm going to tell you a little story about how I started playing God at 15 years of sobriety. I told you I worked for the musical theater industry, and we got a new set of executive directors, and a lot of things were happening. And I was business manager, so over a couple years period, I could see what was happening to the money. I could see what was happening, and I knew this business that was 45 years old was going to go under. I knew it. And I was full of fear because I was, I was a single woman. I was self-supporting through my own contribution. I lived paycheck to paycheck. I was dependent on my job, and I was full of fear. So I started playing God. You know, I decided rather than trust God, I'd just go out there and find me another job. And I went out there, and I found another job, and it was a company I'd worked with the first 10 years of my sobriety, and they offered me a position of administrator of one of their residential care facilities. And I gave this company 2 weeks' notice. And, I did it appropriately, but I really left them in a bind. And they were very, very good to me that period of time. That company was so good to me, and I left them in a major, major bind. It wouldn't have changed anything. They were still going under, no matter what they were going under. But I left them in a bind. And I took this new position of administrator, and I had to go back to school and get my administrator's license of this residential care facility. And that's working with senior citizens, and they had three levels of care, and I love senior citizens, but the owners of that, I started butting heads with them, you know, really, because I work an honest program. I have morals today because of what you taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were wanting me to do things like lie to the state, do all kinds of things that I wasn't willing to do, and we started butting heads. And I was there for a year, and they fired me. They finally fired me. They fired me. I had 16 years of sobriety. They fired me. I mean, and I didn't even feel worthy of talking or sharing my story in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, what am I? My whole story is how I came in here, you know, with a ninth grade education, and I went back to school and I worked my way up in the business world, and now I'm going to come in here with 16 years and tell you, if you want what I have, do what I do, and you too can be fired with 16 years of sobriety. You know, I just didn't feel worthy of doing that, and it was just absolutely devastating for me. And a few years I would have told you, but the good thing about being fired from that job, I had already met my husband a few months before that. That allowed me to marry me, please, you know. A few months before that. So I would have told you that allowed me time to get to know him, and I made a few trips up to the international. It was right after the international. I made a few trips up to Georgia, and my second trip up to Georgia, he proposed to me. And because I didn't have this job and responsibility, I was allowed to marry this man I love and make this move to Georgia. I would have told you it was just the way it was supposed to be. I was supposed to be fired from that job. Well, a few years after that, doing step work and more inventory, I got to the real truth of it with this thing about playing God, because I started thinking about it, and the truth is that business did fold. It closed the very same week I got fired. So if I had stayed at that job, I still would have been out of a job, but I wouldn't have been fired. I wouldn't have been through a year of hell. I did that immoral thing. I'm sorry. I wouldn't have been through that year of butting heads with somebody. I would have been standing by a business that had been really good for me, but I still would have had that freedom to go up and be with my husband and be married. I complicated the heck out of my life because I played God. And I didn't trust God or any of that. So, I mean, with lots of years of sobriety, we can still get in trouble playing God. So what we're going to do now is we're going to say the third step prayer together as a group. And usually when I do this, there's not quite so many people, and it's in a larger room, and we get on our knees. And a lot of us help people off their knees because some of us can't get back up. But because this group is so big, I want everyone to stand up. And you don't need to know it, so don't look at your book. Stand up. I want everyone to hold hands. Somehow take hold of a hand. I don't want the chain to be broken. Because sometimes people will feel an energy go through the chain. This is like at the international when 60,000 alcoholics hold hands and they say the Lord's Prayer. It's just powerful. Does everybody have hold of somebody's hand? Huh? Don't be shy. If you don't have someone's hand, just reach over and grab a double hand. Okay? All right, now I'm going to say the third step prayer line by line, and you repeat after me. Okay? God, I offer myself to Thee.
I offer myself to Thee.
To build with me.
To build with me.
To do with me.
To do with me.
As Thou wilt.
As Thou wilt.
Relieve me of the bondage of self.
Relieve me of the bondage of self.
That I may better do Thy will.
Take away my difficulties,
that victory over them
may bear witness
to those I would help
of Thy power,
Thy love,
Thy way of life.
May I do Thy will always. Amen is optional. Amen. In the big book, it doesn't say amen with the third step, but it says amen with the seventh step. I only absorb what the butt can handle. And so I think there's a lot of, you know, we've got a lot of sessions and everything. So this says that we'll go from 1 to 5 p.m., but because I believe that the mind can only absorb what the butt can handle. We will break at 3:30, and you guys can go take a nap or go take a walk or do whatever you want and get ready for dinner. How's that work? Okay.
I couldn't read that.